Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. On today's episode, we're going to be revisiting the Universes Beyond series that Wizards of the Coast is going to start introducing over the next couple of years for the Magic the Gathering card game, as we are now going to be seeing this month with the Adventures in the Forgotten Realms D&D-themed set. To talk more about what the AFR set means for Magic as a whole, as well as what we hope and, in some cases, maybe fear to see going forward in the Universes Beyond, I am going to introduce a new friend to the show today, Nick from the Commander Theory Podcast. Welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So, where can people find the Commander Theory and you on the internet?
Commander Theory is a podcast. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to reach out to me personally, you can talk to me on Twitter at Commander Theory.
All right, sounds good. And again, before we get started with the rest of today's episode, I'd like to make a very, very important announcement that I think some of my listeners would like to hear. I have now created an official Patreon page for the MTG in Quarantine podcast. If you're interested in helping support my content and hearing more awesome discussions like this one you're hearing today, please visit the page at patreon.com/mtginquarantine. Obviously, things are still a little bit rough since I'm still figuring things out, so please bear with me. Hopefully, I will get this fleshed out over the next couple of weeks so it's actually a fully functioning Patreon, but I had to start somewhere. With that out of the way, I'd like to jump back into our discussion. So, Nick, again, we've now seen the entire AFR set that's going to be coming out here in a couple of weeks. It obviously comes out in Arena before it comes out in paper, but that's beside the point. And we've seen how the set looks, how it functions, there's some interesting new mechanics, and in theory, this has a very slight bent to it that it may or may not really fit in with the Magic the Gathering storyline. But the fact that it is definitely a flavor win for those of us who have played D&D, even someone like myself who hasn't played a ton of it, but I still get some of the more interesting points out of there. What are some of your thoughts about this set, just kind of looking as a whole, just as far as the power level of the cards, the flavor, some of the new mechanics, just what are some of your initial thoughts on this set?
So I think it's a really interesting set for just because it gives us so many data points of like how Wizards is going to treat a non-magic property in a magic set. So one thing that I think has been consistent between like Secret Lair, The Walking Dead, and Adventures in the Forgotten Realms is it seems like the cards are very flavorful. They're really going for things that are going to be evocative for people coming to Magic from whatever IP. But to me, the power level seems a little bit lower, especially compared to, you know, sets we've seen recently, such as like Throne of Eldraine or Theros Beyond Death. Mark Rosewater actually said, when asked about like how they designed dice rolling cards, Mark Rosewater said that Wizards designs them so they aren't relevant in tournament constructed formats. So this is kind of like one of the main mechanics in Adventures of the Forgotten Realms, but it's something that they are intentionally shooting for a low power level on, and I think that they kind of achieve their goal there. And I think that dungeons as well, that's one of the other major mechanics, doesn't seem particularly powerful, like in terms of how they are treating it when they like tack it on to, you know, other creatures or other spells. It seems that they kind of value it maybe like higher than the actual payoff you're getting for venturing into a dungeon. But that's kind of like my impression. I'm going to caveat that by saying that I'm not like a tournament grinder. I'm not someone who's like, you know, gunning for the Pro Tour or anything, but that's just kind of what I'm seeing and what I've heard from other content creators and Wizards staff. So I do totally agree that like they have really hit the nail on the head with a lot of these references and like transliterating some of these D&D concepts into Magic, but it looks like they're going for attracting people based on the flavor rather than attracting people based on these are super powerful cards that are gonna shake up a lot of formats.
Yeah, definitely. And we've seen some bits that obviously on the internet, we have seen some issues, I suppose, with in a way that lack of power. I mean, I take the Tarrasque as an example here, is that you would expect that potentially the most powerful creature in all of the D&D universe is reduced to a green creature that doesn't even have trample. I mean, I think that's kind of the poster child for how toned down the set is. And in a way, it's a really nice and refreshing departure from what we got with that Walking Dead secret lair, all the controversies aside. The fact that those cards were made specifically for, well, we would like to say made specifically for the EDH game, made for Commander, but were also legal in the Eternal formats. Again, I'm not sure if that was necessarily what Wizards was intending. Obviously, we've seen a couple of those cards get some legacy play. But again, the fact that Wizards was willing to tone down that set, or the AFR set in this case, a little bit, because it is technically a standard legal set, I think gives me a little bit more optimism than I shared in my episode a few months ago when I had Cheapwave on here to talk about this exact same thing with Universes Beyond, that if Wizards is able to tone down the power of some of these sets that are not really tied in canonically to the Magic the Gathering story in any way, that hopefully it gives me a little bit of hope that these kinds of cards are not going to be format breaking in their own way, kind of like some of the Walking Dead cards seem to be, because they were the unique mechanical features that they had that no other card shared with. So here now we have a whole set that's kind of revolves around the same sort of thing. I doubt we're going to be seeing any dungeon crawling after this set. And I think it's a good direction that Wizards has basically said that they're not going to try to create a broken set here, that they're going to rely more on the flavor and the D&D community to try to sell the set rather than pulling out a whole bunch of extremely busted cards that are going to mess up Standard and probably be banned within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, like a lot of the other more recent sets have dealt with.
Yeah, and I can totally like understand the their perspective here, because it would kind of put, if they're trying to attract people into the game, you know, it might put a bad taste in their mouth if, you know, all the cards they really want from the set are, you know, like Drizzt or Xanathar or Mordenkainen or any of these like iconic D&D characters. If they were pushed to be constructed viable, then, oh, you know, I can get Drizzt, but he's like $40, or I can get a Mordenkainen, but he's like $35. Like, to not have them be desirable from a gameplay standpoint just makes it easier for them to get into the hands of the D&D players that are coming into the game through this set. So I sort of get what they're doing there, and I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think it kind of goes a lot more along the lines of promotional cards as we've seen in other card games. Obviously, I refer back to my much younger days when I was one of those children who was really obsessed with Pokemon, and I went to go see the first movie, as most of the kids I knew my age did back in that day, back in the ye olde 1999 or so, and part of the promotion there to get children into the theater was to give them mechanically interesting cards, something you couldn't just find in a booster pack. And again, there's been other examples of this ever since then, but the fact is that these D&D cards kind of remind me of that, is that they're not necessarily supposed to be overly powerful. They're very niche. They were very tied into the movie. Obviously, the promo Ancient Mew is far more valuable now than it was then, but again, that's beside the point. But the fact that you could effectively have a unique card that really tied in with that property, that IP, but also didn't really threaten how the constructed play of Pokemon at the time was being played, I think is definitely kind of what Wizards is shooting for here, which is also interesting. Wizards did own the Pokemon license at the time, but again, that's me rambling. I think really what I'm getting out of this is that it is possible to introduce cards into the set to get more people interested into the game, but you're not breaking that format. You're not breaking the whole shell of what Magic is just by creating a broken set with new cards that are going to be pushed. I know in that previous episode we did talk about things like Lord of the Rings. I guess I did point out a few bits of concern about, well, what happens if all of a sudden Frodo becomes legacy viable? What happens if Gandalf becomes a $30 commander and has some ridiculous power that just makes it completely busted a la Urza? And I think that what we're getting here is at least a good first sign going forward. Obviously, we haven't seen any of the official universes beyond. I don't necessarily consider this to be necessarily the same as universes beyond, because, again, we're staying in-house here. But I really think they're going in the right direction here. It'll be interesting to see if this trend continues going on into the new Universes Beyond sets, or if this is just going to be a bump in the road, an anomaly in some way.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely hoping that future Universes Beyond are going to be something that continues this trend. I think it's great if the cards are like exciting and flavorful, but that they aren't, you know, super desirable to like tournament players, something that is going to get priced out of the hands of, you know, potential new Magic players. But I was hoping we could move on to talking a little bit about like the mechanics of AFR and how that might affect future Universes Beyond type products.
Yeah, go for it.
So it seems like Wizards is really willing to push the boundaries of like what Magic is in order to match the flavor of the game that they're trying to incorporate. So, I mean, dice rolling coming into Magic is a first in its, you know, decades long history. But because it's so integral to playing Dungeons and Dragons, they brought it in. And I think it's worth noting that anyone who's like coming to Magic from D&D already owns this game piece. You can't be a D&D player without owning a D20. So, like, Magic can kind of count on that kind of scaffolding that if I know that a player of whatever game or an enthusiast of whatever property has this thing, has this outside game piece, then I can use that in my designs and not have to worry about getting it into their hands. So one thing that sort of came to mind is, you know, we've got this upcoming Warhammer 40K crossover. Mm-hmm. Warhammer 40K uses D6s. That's like one of the main game pieces aside from the models themselves. So if you're certain that anyone coming to Magic from Warhammer 40K owns D6s, you can incorporate that into your designs. You can have like D6 rolling on your Warhammer 40K crossover cards. If you know that you don't have to worry about getting the dice into the hands of the players. And of course, like, there's ways that you can distribute it, like, depending on what the Warhammer 40K product looks like. If it's a main set, maybe they can get D6s out in a pre-release kit. Or if it's, like, a commander deck, maybe they can just shove them in the commander deck in some of that empty space. But, like, if the main audience that you are producing the game four has whatever external pieces, you can count on that.
Sure, and we have seen the at least spin down dice included in bundles for quite a while going back, so I think the precedent is already there to provide a hard game piece for something like this. Obviously, we don't have starter kits in Magic the way you would have a structure deck in Yu-Gi-Oh or in Pokemon, for instance, but the fact that dice have already been given out for so long just as part of regular pack cracking, I think definitely makes this a viable strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that like dungeons also are a really innovative mechanic that brings in an external game piece. And so I think that like they may also be more willing to use space in the pack to like print these like maybe tiles or terrains or just some other game piece that is gets referenced by cards in whatever set. So I think that like R&D has like clear ideas of what a Magic set should be, but I think that they're willing to go beyond those boundaries when treating with other properties, and that's really exciting to see how that's going to be used for these future Universes Beyond.
Yeah, do you want to talk a little bit more about the dungeons for anyone who hasn't had an opportunity to take a look at them?
Oh, yes, okay. So dungeons, I'm not going to bother to read these off. I recommend looking them up yourself, just to, because it's this is, of course, an audio medium, and these are very visual game pieces. But dungeons essentially are these pieces that can be pulled in by any card that references them by saying venture into the dungeon. So venture into the dungeon can be tied to an ability or just put on a spell. And essentially what it means is you go and grab one of these dungeons and place a marker to indicate your progress through the dungeon. And so the first time you venture, you pick your dungeon, and then every subsequent time you venture, you're going further into that dungeon, sort of moving your marker along that map, basically. And so it does a really good job of replicating the flavor of, like, delving through a dungeon. It's almost like having, a little minifigure to represent your hero in a game of Dungeons & Dragons, and, like, a hex map on which you're moving them through. So it really captures that flavor, but it's so, like, beyond what we normally experience in Magic, because it's really making use of, I guess it's, like, spatially very, very different from what we're normally doing. Like, kind of the placement of cards so much on the battlefield, you're not really replicating a physical space that much. But, like, really putting a token and moving it through these predefined rooms on the path through the dungeon is a lot less like Magic and a lot more like other board games or other tabletop games. It feels like, you know, you move in through Betrayal at House on the Hill or something like that.
Yeah, and you're right, is when you do look at a lot of what's on these dungeons, they're not overly powerful. You get a lot of things like create a treasure token or scry. Maybe you lose a life or two, or your opponent loses life. There's one where you can force people to sacrifice. The Tomb of Annihilation forces your opponents to sacrifice pieces. But again, none of them feel overly busted. We've seen far more powerful cards coming out in past sets. So the fact that the dungeons are coming out and are adding this new element to the game, but aren't threatening to really break it. Obviously, I say that with a caveat, because people always find a way to break everything in this game. But the fact that they're not really necessarily designed to be overly powerful definitely helps bring in that flavor while also bringing it back into the game itself. So I do agree with you on that one. These seem interesting. It's something that maybe I'll play around with sometime, and we're going to have to see how the Commander decks do with these mechanics. But yeah, they're very interesting and mechanically unique, and who knows, maybe we could see something like this in the future.
Yeah, I definitely think that you could sort of see how you get a good sense of, like, how they value venturing into the dungeon based on, like, the cards they put it on. Like, you know, scrying one or getting a treasure, it's not worthless, but you can definitely, like, assign an approximate mana value for that type of effect, and, like, based on the cards it's going on, it's like, oh, this is a 3/4 for 4 that ventures when it enters the battlefield. So you get a sense they value it maybe, like, as at a mana or a half a mana, and I think that's possibly a little high for given how, like, low impact a lot of the effects are. One other thing I wanted to talk about is sort of how to integrate the flavor of Universes Beyond, of these properties that they're bringing in, with the rules of Magic and the flavor of Magic, because I think that's going to be a big challenge. I think they did a pretty good job of it in Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, and I think that the way they did it here is going to give us some sense of what it might look like in the future.
Sure, but I think before we get to that point, we should also talk about the modality of some of the cards in the set as well, where you do have two options, whether it enters the battlefield or dies. It's definitely another themed bit here. We've seen cards that have an option that when you play it, again, you're always going to come back to something like Cryptic Command, which is extremely confusing, but the fact that you can play one of two effects or one of three effects on a permanent is not something we've necessarily seen a ton of as of late. So and the fact that those are very themed in with the D&D feel, I think definitely adds to it. So instead of saying, well, you either draw a card or scry one or something, you actually get some flavor text, some very flavorful things that really work with really work with the whole set. So I'm looking at I chose a random card, but there's an instant for one blue. It's going to be a common called You See a Guard Approach. And instead of being, you know, just choose one, here's three options where we're just going to say what those options are, they actually give you that little bit of extra flavor text by saying distract the guard, you tap target creature, or you can choose hide. And target creature you control gains hexproof until end of turn. And I just think this really adds an extra level of flavor to these cards that otherwise would just be pretty normal. If you have a common that just says tap target creature or target creature you control gains hexproof, that's fine. That's typically what we'd expect from a common or an uncommon in a regular standard legal set. But the fact that we're bringing in some very related artwork, we have some interesting flavor text, as well as you have those two pieces of, I guess, decisions that you as a player could make in D&D when your DM gives you this prompt, I think really adds an extra level, even if it doesn't really impact the game in any way.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think all of these choice cards really capture the feel of Dungeons & Dragons in that it is so open-ended. You can kind of do whatever you want, and as many like DMs I'm sure know, despite what kind of choices you try to lay out for the players, they might totally surprise you by doing something completely different. So that open-ended feel definitely is captured well by these cards and by the dungeons in addition. Like I probably should have mentioned this earlier, but like you're not just going straight through the dungeon, you are making decisions along the way. And that is also something that captures the feel of Dungeons and Dragons and like how open-ended it is. So, you know, I think that's something we can look to in the future, like when we think about what is it like to explore the world of Lord of the Rings. It's, you know, there's a lot of history, there's a lot of, I mean, the beautiful landscapes, you know, there's all these different peoples and stories that go back thousands of years. If they're pulling directly from the book, then of course there's going to be a whole lot of songs and poems. But it's interesting that like they've really focused on capturing the gameplay in card form and done it using these tools that already existed in Magic, of just like modal cards or charms or whatever.
And even as someone in myself who has not played a whole lot of D&D, I still really enjoy the feeling of having a choice in which mode you take out of these sorts of cards. The dungeons are interesting. The, I guess, perceived choices you get based on those cards are interesting. I'm even curious to see how the dice rolling works. Obviously, that's not going to be completely broken. We have seen some die rolling in silver-bordered sets, but I believe this would be the first time that we've had die rolling as part of a black bordered set. So that's going to be something else that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that works out, as well as the warlock, oh, sorry, as well as the class enchantments, like warlock class, which I'm looking at the moment. And obviously, we've seen level up cards in sets before, but these also are provided on, instead of on a creature, are on an enchantment instead. So it's just interesting to see how Wizards is playing around with some of these concepts that they've had before, but now in a single set that is blackboard and standard legal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That they did a really good job of nailing the feeling of progression you get, you know, as your character levels up, as you get access to new abilities. That's a fantastic point about the class enchantments that they introduced. So I think that it's going to be a little bit easier to see how things might translate from another game like Warhammer 40K, where, you know, if, for example, like some parts of Warhammer 40K are pretty analogous to how things are in Magic. Like, you know, units will have stats, and like some of them are kind of equivalent to power, and some of them are kind of equivalent to toughness. And so you can there's some things you can translate over pretty well, but capturing something that's not a game, something that like Stranger Things or like Lord of the Rings, going to be a lot more challenging, because it's something you experience, but it's not something you do. So I think I'm very curious to see how they're going to execute on that.
Yeah, so let's start speculating a little bit on that. Now that we have this experience seeing how Wizards can do a set that basically isn't set in the Magic universe at all, what do we expect going forward from some of these universes beyond bits where we leave the Wizards of the Coast IPs and we start going into more pop culture bits? Again, we did talk about this more on the episode I did a few months ago with Sheepwave. Again, if you're interested in listening to the episode, I highly recommend it. And it's just interesting to see how this set has added some new mechanics, but has also really dipped into Magic's past to be able to try to update some mechanics and some bits of gameplay that have already been touched on, but maybe weren't fully fleshed out. How do you think that those kinds of approaches to the game could potentially be translated into the universes beyond? And what do you think are potentially some of the pitfalls that could happen if the IP takes more precedence over the gameplay?
That's a good question. So I think that Wizards has shown that it's willing to be pretty flexible, but that it's going to start that I think that Wizards is going to start off by trying to match things to what already exists in Magic. So for example, like when matching like races or classes to creature types, they'll make do with kind of what already exists first and then add only when necessary. So for example, there's a something that's clearly flavored as a half elf sorcerer. It's called Aberrant Mind Sorcerer. And while like the race would be half elf in D&D and the class would be sorcerer, in Magic it's a human elf shaman, which most like those are all existing types, maybe used in a slightly different way, but it gets the point across to somebody coming here from D&D. And similarly, like Nadar, Selfless Paladin, if this were a character in D&D, it would be a dragonborn paladin, but in Magic it's a dragon knight. Like, that's close enough that you can just sort of use existing creature types, use Magic's history and what already has going for it. But for some things, they've that there is no existing precedent, they are adding new things to Magic, and that's going to just be a part of Magic going forward. Or at least, you know, it's enshrined in the rules whenever they add a creature type to the game. So, like, for example, Bard, Beholder, Gnoll, Halfling, Tiefling, these are all things that are kind of unique to D&D that are being brought into Magic with Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. And I think that, like, that's kind of the lens we gotta use when we're looking at things like, when we're looking at things like Warhammer 40K or Lord of the Rings. Like, most of the flavor concepts in, say, Lord of the Rings can be translated pretty well into Magic, but especially with the addition of like halfling type, that makes things pretty simple. But like Warhammer 40K, okay, I could probably conceive of a space marine as a human soldier, but I think that it's not unreasonable to expect that like they might add the Tyranid creature type, or they might add the Tau creature type, something like that. And even though, like, you know, Eldar are space elves or whatever, it's possible that they might be given the Eldar type rather than just calling them elves. So I think that Wizards is gonna go for, like, first, what can we fit? What will, like, somebody coming from outside the game recognize as their own? And if there's nothing that they will recognize, then we'll add something new. And I think that, like, the flavor text that they've put onto, like, the choice mechanics in AFR, that's another good way to, like, sort of guide people's eyes to what's going on. Because, you know, somebody coming to Magic from D&D isn't going to know, sort of, like, that tapping something down and it doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step is, like, flavored as ice as flavored as frost in Magic. But if you put a couple words in front of it saying like cone of cold or something like that, then the D&D player is going to pick up on it and like, oh, okay, that's what cone of cold is. That's how cone of cold is represented in this card game. So I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to use those kind of flavor words just to help people get it if they don't sort of understand how, like, you know, what different mechanics mean in the flavor of Magic.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point you bring up. I actually didn't even think about that. Is you could easily put in a lot of very useful keywords or concepts from those IPs and just put them into Magic. So, I mean, I could even kind of see from Lord of the Rings, which I'm more familiar with, that you could potentially bring choice, modal choice cards back in some way, not necessarily just what, like with the example we just mentioned of that blue instant, but potentially even something like the dungeons. I mean, I really think that there are enough choices in the Lord of the Rings story that have to be made, and the fact that the main parties have to be separated to be able to continue their journey kind of fits in with the same dungeon concept, that you have to split your party in some cases to be able to get multiple tasks done in a timely manner. So, I mean, I suppose in a way the dungeons here in AFR could even open up the door for something mechanically focused like Lord of the Rings too. I mean, I'm just speculating on this one since we won't know more about this for quite a while yet, but I think it would be interesting to potentially see something like that come back in the future if they so want to at Wizards.
Yeah, and I'm also curious like how they might reskin existing mechanics to sort of fit the flavor. Like, you know, Lord of the Rings, you know, everyone is tempted by the ring and everyone's out to get it. Like, what if they did a slight tweak on the monarch as like, this is the thing that everyone is attacking each other to get a hold of, and just call it the One Ring or something like that. I think there's a lot of ways to twist existing Magic mechanics because we've got such a long history to make them fit new worlds.
Interesting. I think in regards to that one, though, it would have to be functionally different than Monarch, though. I don't know if you could necessarily reskin Monarch and just say, well, all of a sudden now it's just One Ring. Maybe there has to be cards on there saying, you know, maybe it's just flavor text, just saying you become the Monarch. Monarch means this, and then have the reminder text saying this, yada, 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 this is what Monarch means. But yeah, I could definitely see something like that happen, as well as potentially bringing in new creature types as well. I mean, the Eye of Sauron technically would be an eye, but is it a demon eye? Is it a devil eye? What about the Balrog? If the Tarrasque is a beast, what is the Balrog a demon, a devil, what?
Yeah, I think that, and I'm so curious to see how they handle the Warhammer 40K creature types, because that's, you know, a completely different genre, and integrating that is going to be a greater challenge, especially given how different and how bizarre these things are compared to, like, you know, the standard fantasy genre tropes that Magic typically trades in.
Sure. And it will be very interesting to see how that goes down. Again, I'm trying to say here that we're not being negative about Universes Beyond. I just do reserve some reserved interest in seeing how these go, because again, we as Magic players who have already been in the game for so long, we have a certain level of expectations we like to see. And breaking that typical mold is always scary. I mean, again, there was a lot of talk about just this set going into it, and would it potentially break what we consider the boundaries of Magic? Fortunately, it really hasn't, because D&D really fits in very well within the fabric of what makes Magic the Gathering so great. Once we start leaving those boundaries, though, that could potentially create some friction. Obviously, it has since the announcement, and until we really get to see what those cards are going to be looking like, there's definitely going to be room for potential dissent here. So I think we have to be cognizant of that fact, and at least I'm still a little skeptical about it until I see what those sets are, and hopefully they prove me wrong.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious to see what this might mean in terms of a shift of how Wizards thinks about Magic, and the fact that its rule set is now able to be divorced from its flavor really opens up a lot of doors into what like universes, the directions that Universes Beyond can go in. I mean, there's so many properties out there that have fan bases that I'm sure could be appreciate, like the how well put together the rule system of Magic is, how fun it is just to play this game. And so I think there's really no limit into how many different ways you can skin Magic, and that, like, clearly Wizards is experimenting with a gamut that goes from, you know, the modern day with The Walking Dead or with Stranger Things, all the way to the far future with Warhammer 40K. So how do you, I'm a little curious about how you feel about Magic maybe becoming more than just the fantasy genre, but becoming more about the rules and less about, like, oh, these particular characters or this particular genre.
I mean, I came to Magic because I really enjoyed not just the gameplay, but the storyline and the concept of the recurring characters, the fantasy theme has definitely kept me interested throughout the last couple of years. And again, I am concerned on a certain level that if Wizards goes more mechanically into the story, away from the story that has been established and more towards the mechanics, that will it necessarily feel like Magic? And that's where a lot of my, concern comes from. Is, well, it would be interesting to see bringing more IPs into the game. There is still a caveat that if it starts to take away from what we consider Magic, just, you know, by the flavor, are we necessarily playing the same game? Other games have looked to expand in certain ways, but they stay inside the box, the boundary, the fabric I just mentioned a moment ago about the flavor. Everything still feels like everything else, just obviously maybe reskinned or something, but you don't have other IPs going in there and fundamentally changing the structure of those games. So I'd be lying if I said I wasn't concerned about that. But I want to try to be optimistic best I can that Wizards will find a tasteful way to make sure that Magic stays the way it is, even if they start introducing other IPs into the franchise. Because I would hate to see people leave the game, potentially. I'm not going to leave the game, but I would hate to see people leave the game because all of a sudden now Lord of the Rings cards or Warhammer cards or even the Walking Dead cards are all of a sudden basically pushing out everything that we enjoy about Magic and the flavor of Magic in favor of trying to bring pop culture, in which case you potentially create a whole nother game that's not really about Magic anymore. It's just using the Magic rule sets. But, I mean, at that point, we could almost be playing Monopoly. So a lot of things we have to still see how they go there. I'm concerned, but I just hope that we see more things like AFR and we don't have any cards or theories here that really break out of what we know to be Magic.
Well, I think that, Wizards has really tried to create choices for people within Magic and give everyone access to, like, something that they like within the multiverse of Magic. So, you know, whether you, like, are really into Norse mythology, there is a set particular for you. And if you're really into Egyptian mythology, there's a set for you. If you, like, you know, really love fairies, there's sets that are going to focus on fairies where you can, share your appreciation for fairies through the medium of Magic. And I think that I don't expect that, like, the Magic core flavor to ever go away, but I think it's possible that one day it'll just be sort of one, I guess, product line within the Magic rules set. Because I think that while there are people within Magic who, would get really turned off if other things came in, there's still always going to be a product for them. I don't think that will ever change. But I can also imagine that there are people outside Magic who would get turned off by a game full of, you know, unicorns or dragons or whatever, but that might react more strongly to, like, oh, this is a game all about, like, sci-fi tropes. Okay, I can get into that. Or somebody who, you know, is really into horror and loves horror movies, and to have a product line that focuses on that could be something that could bring them into the Magic rule set. I don't know. I think there's a lot of room for growth, and I don't think that Magic will ever stop being Magic, but it might become other things as well.
So do you think that Wizards would consider making some of these products in a different border potentially? Obviously, we've seen silver border for the unsets, but if they start going to further flung IPs where you're really starting to get away from the whole realm of Magic, would they potentially consider releasing those sets with the caveat that they wouldn't be legal in any sanctioned format? What do you think about that as a potential compromise for some of these issues if we do get there?
That's a great question. I think that it would definitely have some sort of distinguishing feature. Like, they are working hard to make it clear that, like, you know, these Walking Dead cards, they have that triangle, you know, symbol down at the bottom, and all the universes beyond are going to have that same marker. So I'm sure that they're going to find some way to, like, visually distinguish anything they do that's, like a Magic card is always going to be a Magic card, and you're always going to be able to tell, like, what is within the Magic universe. I'm sure that's not going to change. And I wouldn't be surprised if they went even further with some other expressions of the Magic rule set, because, like, you know, the back of a Magic card is, like, you know, clearly some kind of Wizard's tome. It's something that really, like, carries that communicates that this is a fantasy game. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like, if you're trying to communicate a science fiction game, a horror game, it could have, and even in, like, you know, we call it the Magic rule set, but maybe that's too small a name. Like, maybe we should just think of it as, like, the Wizards card game rule set, and other expressions of this rule set can actually have a non-Magic name, like a completely different background, like a completely different card back, a completely different name instead of Magic the Gathering, like Space the Convergence, or like Horror the Survival. I think that, you know, the Magic rule set is excellent, and I love the rule set. And I think that there's opportunities out there to repackage it and change how it looks in order to reach a different audience.
So do you think that this could, and again, I'm speculating a little bit here, so just hold on with me here. Do you think that if we get to a point, let's say in the next 5 to 6 years, where we are starting to get multiple potentially premium sets out of these multiple IPs that would be separate from regular Magic standard legal sets that we're getting already, do you think that there could almost be a separate tagline where you could basically say there's a Magic the Gathering set, and then there's kind of an offshoot Universes Beyond set, where all of a sudden you're starting to double your releases potentially, where you have your standard legal set here, and then your Universes Beyond that kind of ties in about the same time, is released about the same time, but is functionally the same, but not Magic themed within the same mechanics? I suppose you could almost have like two different games at some point if this continues.
I see where you're going with this. Are you suggesting like the Godzilla treatment, but for an entire set, like where the mechanics are exactly the same, but you're basically interpreting the mechanics in through like a different genre?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's kind of hard to describe what I'm thinking about this, but potentially have two separate games at that point where you have everything that feels like Magic being in its own game. The sets are still themed like that, and everything in Universes Beyond would be functionally similar, but would almost be like its own meta with its own card pool based on how many cards have already been released for those sets. And again, this is just wild speculation. It probably won't happen because it's very, very complicated. But depending on how we see these new IPs come in here, it could definitely feel like completely different kinds of products. We'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm very curious, especially like, you know, as Arena gains prominence, how they're going to integrate Universes Beyond into digital Magic. Like, is there going to be a day where you play your Space Marine and then like a Space Marine animation plays like on the plaza in Kaladesh? There's so many different ways to experience magic these days, and it's interesting to see like how Universes Beyond is going to infiltrate all those different spaces.
So I'll ask you before we wrap up for today, where do you think Universes Beyond is going to be going in the next couple of years? And how do you think this is going to be, how do you think we as players are going to be able to look back on this in, let's say, 5 years? And just, you know, what do you think will happen in the next couple of years?
So they've said that Secret Lair, The Walking Dead was at the time the most popular Secret Lair they had released to date. So I think that it's going to be, I mean, Universes Beyond is not going away. I think that the reception, what I've seen of the reception of Adventures in the Forgotten Realms has also been very positive. And I mean, it remains to be seen like how many D&D players it's going to bring into the game. But I think we're not going backwards. Because they are making products that are mostly appealing to Magic players, and which are, you know, also reaching a new audience. I think it's just an opportunity for them to, you know, make more profit. I expect to see a lot more experimentation. Like Chris Cox, when he came into Magic, or came into Wizards of the Coast, one of his strategies he came up with was a lot more experimentation in addition to like the maintaining the strong brands. So it was because of him that we ended up seeing that short-lived Transformers card game. So I would expect, given the initial success of Secret Lair, that, you know, leadership it has at Wizards of the Coast would be interested in maybe like seeing how far they can stray before they start to fail. Like, I think it makes business sense for them to figure out exactly where the boundaries are, how far they can get with these Universes Beyond before the players start to reject them. And so I think things are going to get weird for a while until there's a backlash. And then they're once they've like identified the safe space to release Universes Beyond, like the type of genres, the type of properties that people are going to respond to and that Magic players aren't going to reject, then we're just going to see a lot more of those types of products, and maybe even expand from like these Secret Lairs to like full Magic sets taking up a slot in the normal release calendar.
And we're definitely going to just have to see where these things go going in the future. So obviously AFR releases a little later this month, and then I think the other Universes Beyond sets will drop next year at some point. Is that right?
I think that's right, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll have to see and reserve some of our judgment until we really see more of these sets and what they attempt to do. Hopefully they will at least feel like Magic, and we won't have to worry about this going forward.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I want to really thank you, Nick, for taking the time to be on the podcast with me today. It's really been great having you.
Yeah, it's been an excellent conversation. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Again, where can people find you and the Commander Theory on the internet?
So you can reach out to me on Twitter at Commander Theory, or you can find the Commander Theory podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. And you can find the entire back catalog of the MTG in Quarantine podcast on the usual outlets, Spotify, Google, Apple, Player FM, Pocket Casts, MTG Casts, and many, many others. You can find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. And again, for those of you just tuning in, I have now released the official Patreon page of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. The basic entry level will get you a shout out on all of my episodes. So if you're interested in doing that and getting involved, definitely head on over to patreon.com/MTG in Quarantine. Again, you've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.